Prologue. Just another lunch. Grab him by the pussy. The sentence that reverberated around the world on October 7th, 2016. The quote was an excerpt from a recording that became forever known as the Access Hollywood tape, published by the Washington Post and aired on NBC News a month before the 2016 presidential election. It had been recorded 11 years earlier, in September 2005, on a bus taking Donald Trump to make a cameo on the NBC soap opera, Days of Our Lives. Now infamously, Donald told TV host Billy Bush, "I'm automatically attracted to beautiful. I just start kissing them. It's like a magnet. Just kiss. I don't even wait. And when you're a star, they let you do it. You can do anything. Grab him by the pussy." When the story broke about the tape, I was deeply immersed in my oldest son, Zach's, health problems related to his life-threatening food allergies and other issues that required many doctor's visits and therapies. My middle son, Tyler, was transferring to a new school, and my daughter, Alexi, was adjusting to hers. I was inching closer to the signing stage of two partnership deals I'd personally and financially been invested in for years and believed would define the next decade of my life. So the first I heard of the recording was from Zach, who called me from boarding school and asked, "What do you think about this tape, Mom? Do you think Mr. Trump really said that? I hope Melania's okay. Tell her I say hi." I had no idea what he was referring to. Barron Trump was at the same school as my two younger children. Were all the students talking about it at school, too? Had Barron heard? At dinner that night with my kids, the tape was topic A. I still hadn't heard the entire recording myself or read the transcript. At the time of the recording, Donald and Melania were practically newlyweds. She was a few months pregnant. I'd never heard him speak that way in my life, and it didn't exactly ring true. But his reputation for being a Lothario preceded him, so of course it was possible. Wow, was I in for a shock when I heard the video with my own ears. Donald had actually said that about chasing TV host Nancy O'Dell and manhandling random women? The words themselves on the Access Hollywood tape were offensive, whether or not Donald actually did what he described, but I wasn't completely shocked by them. For more than 20 years, I worked with some of the most influential and powerful male executives in entertainment, fashion, media, and politics. Harvey Weinstein, Charlie Rose, Mario Testino, Patrick Demarchelier, and Russell Simmons, who have now fallen from their mighty tower. I think the difference between the guy talk that I experienced and what Donald said, which really rubbed me the wrong way, was that he was bragging about violating women. I knew how men could talk when they thought women weren't listening, but this was not something you'd expect to hear from a presidential candidate. Back in the early 90s, I worked in the music business for Ron Delsner, the legendary granddaddy of rock promoters, the boy from Queens who created the concept of massive outdoor concerts in Central Park. Ron had booked all the greats all over the world, the Rolling Stones, Jimi Hendrix, the Beatles, Depeche Mode, Janis Joplin, Simon & Garfunkel, you name it. He talked faster than I did, out of both sides of his mouth, and said things like, "Stephanie, get over here and let's see what you can do with those 6-foot-long legs." I was 24 at the time. His remarks, said with a twinkle of mischief, were right to my face, not hidden or just with the guys. It was a different era, so I took them in stride on my 6-foot-long legs. In fact, when I agreed to produce the 58th presidential inauguration for our 45th president, I called Ron to see if he'd help me find some musical acts. He made himself available the very next day. Ron is a bit crass, but he is all heart. Donald, on the other hand, boasted with the boys on the bus. And then, as soon as a woman came on the scene, they immediately shut up. They knew that what they were saying was wrong. I felt sick trying to explain to my kids why Donald, not only the Republican nominee for president, but my friend's husband, a man they'd known their whole lives, had bragged about grabbing women's private parts without their consent. I was concerned for Melania and worried about Barron, too. But, then again, she had responded to my concern many times over the years with, "Don't be. I know who I married." Very matter-of-factly, she had always stipulated, "Barron is my first priority and he is strong." I always interpreted that as her resigning herself to an unconventional marriage or household and having no expectations of Donald as a faithful husband or doting father. He was a narcissist to the core. But his admitting to the entire world that his fame gave him superpowers to violate women had to have affected her. I would have been horrified if my husband talked about randomly assaulting women and immediately out the door to a divorce lawyer's office. But Melania's basic instinct and reaction were not those of a so-called normal woman with so-called normal feelings about her far from normal marriage. I honestly had no idea how she was handling it. Out of concern and some curiosity, I texted her on October 9th, "Are you okay?" The next day she replied, "Hi, love. I canceled interview tomorrow, if you have time for lunch." I figured out she'd planned on doing press about the recording, but had put it off. She eventually did talk to Anderson Cooper the following week in a stiff, toeing-the-line interview. I was a bit surprised that, in the epic shitstorm the Trump family was in, she'd have time for lunch. But then again, Melania loved to lunch. Her tone, "Let's do the mark. I'll make a reservation for tomorrow. I need to leave at 2:30 p.m. to pick Baron up from school at 3 p.m. Can you do 12:15? I was relieved. I had yet to see Melania freak out about anything. But if she were ever going to, wouldn't it be over this? We had our lunch routine. We alternated between three restaurants, wrapping up in under 3 hours, and took turns paying the bill. When privacy was the prerequisite, our usual spot was the Marc restaurant by Jean Georges, inside the posh luxury hotel of the same name on Manhattan's exclusive Upper East Side. I texted that I was running late. She texted back that she was there already, but not to rush. When I finally arrived, I hurried through the sparkly hotel entrance and the bar toward our regular table. I didn't notice any Secret Service, men or women, but I knew they had to be there. Our table was off to the side against the wall, as private as you could get in this busy restaurant. I wish I'd been on time, so I could have seen the reaction of the other lunchgoers when the most talked-about woman in the world arrived in one of her impeccable outfits, with her signature look of a jacket draped across her shoulders and a neat-as-always coiffure. New Yorkers don't often stare at celebrities, and definitely not while dining at the A-list celeb enclave, The Marc, which hosted many of them. But Melania must have made heads swivel that day. She looked happy to see me as I took my seat next to her, smile, kiss, kiss. It was eerily ordinary, like any other lunch greeting at The Marc or Cipriani or Michael's. Just two friends catching up. Nothing to see here, folks. Melania ordered first, grilled salmon, well done, sautéed spinach, and a side of French fries. I jumped in and said, "Make that two, please, and one Diet Coke, no ice for her, and a Diet Coke with ice for me." After the waiter left, I was looking right at her, listening to every word she said about how busy she was, what Baron was up to, details about her upcoming plans and travel. It was surreal, too normal. I started laughing at the weirdness and then, out of the blue, said, "Don't kill me, but I have to ask." "Oh boy," she said, "what is it?" How many times have the words pussy and president been in the same sentence? She looked at me, her blue eyes sparkling, and then she started laughing, laughing to the point where she needed to blot the tears from her eyes with her napkin. I remember thinking, thank God this table is semi-private. I could just see the Page Six headline now. Melania Trump laughing her ass off in public 3 days after pussy bombshell. Just for the record, we weren't laughing off Donald's repulsive comments. Many women would come forward in the following weeks with claims about his groping and assaulting them, but I wasn't aware of any of them on October 11th, the day of our lunch. The laughter was more of a release of tension than anything else. As in control as she was, Melania would have to have been made of steel not to feel stress over the tape. Our friendship, the trust we shared, was perhaps the release valve. I was the conduit for her to let go, if only for a few hysterical seconds. Once we calmed down and wiped away the tears, she got serious. The subject was now open, and she had something to say. "People want him to get out of the race," she told me. I looked at her closely. I already knew the answer, but asked anyway, "Would he ever walk away?" "No way. He's not going anywhere," she said. I'd read that there had been calls for Donald to drop out of the race from within the Republican Party. Public reaction was split. Trump fans bought his locker room talk explanation. Everyone in my social and professional circles in New York was repulsed by his comments, but they were mostly horrified by just about all that he'd said and did. I don't know what's going to happen, she said. It's not right, what he said. It's unacceptable. If it weren't for this, there would be no question. He would win. Throughout the long campaign, Melania had never doubted that Donald would win. This was the first time her faith was shaken. The bill came. She insisted on taking me to lunch. She signed the receipt, and I thanked her for the meal. But I couldn't leave without asking, "Aren't you angry?" She shook her head. "Nope. He is who he is. I told him that if he ran for president, he had to be ready for everything to be opened up and exposed. His whole life. And yours, too," I thought. I asked, "Are you really ready for everything about Donald? And you, your past, and your marriage?" I didn't add. "To come out?" She made one of her favorite gestures, a "that's that," demonstrated by brushing her hands together. "If it happens, it happens." She meant it when she said, "He knows he better be ready." I paused, my head down, and ever so slowly looked up and asked, "And Baron?" Her jaw clenched tightly, and she pursed her shiny lips. She said, "I talk with him, and I teach him, with all the political chaos around him, to be strong." She wasn't worried that he couldn't handle it. She told her 10-year-old, just as she'd told me many times, "What doesn't kill you only makes you stronger." And that's how she lived her life. But had Baron absorbed it? He had led a sheltered life. Was he as tough as his mom? That remained to be seen. We inched closer to each other, our voices barely above a whisper. She said, "Look, I know what the truth is, and it doesn't need to be explained. Some things don't need to be dignified with an answer." "I agree with you," I said, "but as First Lady, as a public figure, you won't be able to ignore this stuff." I was trying to tell her in a subtle and polite way she would have an obligation to be a role model to our country and the world. Without hesitation, she said, "Of course I will." How silly of me to think otherwise. "It's my life," she said. "It's nobody's business." For her, public disgrace was nothing more than brushing sand off her feet after a stroll on the beach. For me, and most others, it would be like drowning in quicksand. I was in awe of her uncrackable composure. I'd gone to that lunch concerned about how she was coping, but she didn't want or need my or anyone's sympathy. "Don't feel sorry for me," she said over lesser slights, such as people calling her a gold digger or a hostage. "I'm fine." The press and people all over the world always projected their own emotions onto Melania, assuming she felt the same way they would under the same circumstances. I'd known all along how impenetrable and unflappable she was, but until that lunch, I had no idea of her grit. Not many people could bear having their lives ripped open and all the regretful, hateful, humiliating moments splayed out for the world to see and judge. Melania and Donald, a perfect match, could tolerate any amount of ridicule and flick it aside. That's that. If it happens, it happens. If they could withstand this level of pressure and scrutiny, maybe they should be in the White House. Beneath her focused stare and perfectly crafted smile, she conceals an inexplicable calm that spreads to all those around her, especially to her husband and to her friends. When Donald gets flustered, you can tell because his face goes from tempered orange to bright red. All he has to do is look at her, and he settles down. I've seen it happen across the dinner table, but more tellingly, I've witnessed it at press conferences. She sits in the front row posing, shielded from all sides with invisible armor. Her chin tucked tightly to her chest and her eyes staring, deadpan, at a spot on the floor in front of her. But when he stands up behind the lectern, her fearless gaze lifts and shifts into a convincing smile for her man, and he is taken over by calmness. I've felt Melania's calm spread into me when I've been upset and crying. One arched eyebrow or word from her could ground me. From the moment Melania entered my life, I was drawn to learn more about her, and sometimes succeeded. I do know that she is honest, is loving, prizes her privacy above all things, and is faithful to her core values in ways Donald could never be. We stood up to go. "He's going to win," I said, "and you're going to be First Lady." We exited the Mark restaurant through the rear door that leads directly into the hotel lobby, avoiding the onlookers seated at the bar. Muse, her Secret Service code name, was on the move. Her security team appeared suddenly in the lobby and on the street outside, waiting to whisk her away. In mere weeks, Donald Trump would be elected president. Melania and I would cross the line from friendship to partnership. I would be recruited to work on the inauguration and, after that, in the First Lady's office, where I saw and experienced shocking and terrifying behavior and conduct from people who know better. During my 2 years in Trump world, I was afraid for myself, my friend, and our country. Suffice it to say, it ended badly for me and for us. Melania, don't worry about her. She's fine.